Hi, everyone. During the COVID pandemic, what happened for so many of our children is that they were forced to start taking classes online, oftentimes with their teachers from their actual physical buildings. But nonetheless, they went online. And one of the interesting things that happened after that is that many students started to remain online and to actually complete their entire K-12 experience, possibly through online classes and with online schools. That's a trend that's not going to go away. And we're going to learn more about a school that is an online school for students in today's episode of Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thank you so much, Trinity, for doing that introduction. Joining me today is Brittany Bates. She's the Senior Vice President and Principal of the U.S. Diploma at Crimson Global Academy. Crimson Global is an internationally accredited online private school serving over 1,500 students from more than 60 countries. Before joining Crimson Global Academy, Brittany served as a principal, intervention coordinator, and a teacher in the state of Oregon. Brittany, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for giving me your time today.
Lovely to meet you. Wow, that title when it comes out sounds just as big as it feels.
I was trying to sort of decipher exactly all the responsibilities that would go into that. I don't envy you. It certainly sounds like you have a lot on your plate, but I'm sure it's a lot of fun too.
Oh, absolutely. This school is a passion project of mine, and I love every moment of it.
So let's start by learning about you. As I mentioned when I did the introduction of you, you started out being a teacher in a physical classroom. My recollection is that you were teaching younger grade levels, but you can clarify that. Can you kind of talk about what your experience in teaching was and, you know, what was it that led you to want to be a part of an online school?
Yes, absolutely. So I came to teaching in a roundabout sort of way, had a different career path in mind, and had an incredible mentor look at me and say, you ever thought about being a teacher? And as I discussed it with friends and just continued to mull it about, everybody looked at me and said, yes, you've always been a teacher, you just didn't realize it. And I have a younger brother who's about 18 years younger than myself, and we met, and I went and met with his teacher. He was going to actually my childhood school, and started volunteering in the classroom and then pursued a teaching degree and credential and started in a kindergarten room and worked my way up into second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade and couldn't find a grade level I didn't enjoy teaching. Then also worked at junior high, loved junior high school, loved those teachers as well. And as I progressed through teaching in person, my husband and I decided to start a family. And when we made that decision, I had to come to a realization of where did I want to spend my time, either in the classroom or with my young daughter. And at that time, I decided I wanted to try to stay home for a year. And luckily in my state, you can take a year off of a classroom and you can make those decisions. Shortly thereafter, I had my second daughter as well. And so I looked at my spouse and said, I cannot drive 90 minutes and perform in the classroom the way I wanted to. So I started looking into online education. And when I did that, I went through a real struggle of, is this real school? What is teaching online? And this is back in 2013. And so this is preceding COVID. And I had worked so hard to work in public education, and I love public education, and we need quality public schools. And so I really struggled with what it meant to leave that space, but I did it. And I met my first students, and it was a smaller online school. And I discovered that when you don't know that you can't do something online, you can. And so I inherently brought all of that teaching practice to the virtual space. And from there, as I worked in that space, I was always on the phone with the curriculum director. I was always on the phone with the executive director saying, what if we did it this way? Or I was teaching this lesson and we should really be talking to teachers about how we bring this into our practice. And I worked through that school where they continued to promote me and took that school from about 70 students to about 625 students, just guiding teachers, guiding students, writing curriculum, rose to be their executive director of education. And then COVID happened. And I started going to, I started looking into how do I consult? How do I help other schools do this? How do I help? How do we make this look better? And after about a year of consulting and working with other in-person school districts, and that that's when I found CGA and they wanted to start this program. And the rest, they say, is history.
As you think back about, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. I think that, you know, as I think about my teacher friends, there are so many of them that have went through experiences like yours where they're really trying to figure out how do you balance work, life, family when you're a teacher. And, you know, in Southern Ohio where I live, they don't have the same commute that you described you having, but still a 20-minute commute is a 20-minute commute. And I think that's a struggle. And I think that what you were describing as sort of the cognitive processing you went through about leaving the school that you felt very passionate about and going to a different type of school, I see them struggling with that right now. And I think that that's it's an important struggle. And I think some of my friends and even maybe family members might end up teaching online as a result of that. At the same time, worrying about those kids that are in their classroom that, you know, they're providing maybe what could be the most substantive meal that they'll have, you know, before they get lunch period, right? And, you know, all those things, all those feelings. So thank you for sharing that story and bringing it up. As you think back about when you were a teacher in a physical classroom and then made the transition to online, and you've been doing it for a long time, what do you think are the skills that stay with you and are sticky when you transition into online teaching that would have been there even if you were in a physical classroom? And what do you think are the skills that you had to sort of develop because you made that switch?
Right. So really, it's that human element, that community element. Educators, I'm sure you have educators who listen to this, educators as a whole tend to be caretakers, tend to be people problem solvers, right? We get a student in our space, whether that be virtual or physical, and we want to reach them. We want to demystify content. We want to help them learn that learning objective. And that transfers no matter what space you're teaching in. So that's a sticky skill. The paradigm shift of going online was I'm used to physically moving around my space. I'm used to leaning over a piece of paper and using a highlighter and showing the student in this very physical closeness. And how do I replicate that online? And so that was where when I started working online, I realized I can do this online. But that was where the moment when I looked at, but how am I going to? I know I can give a running record online for my elementary teaching friends. I know that I can help a student build a model online. I know that I can teach the scientific process online. But I just need to figure out how do I make it feel more comfortable for me as the teacher. A lot of times the students don't know that it's uncomfortable. It's me as the educator, because I was trained a certain way, that come to the work and go, but this isn't how it's supposed to work or feel. And so that was where the real key paradigm shift took place.
Yeah, interesting. I'm sure that you've had a lot of different types of experiences since you've been teaching online for such a, you know, pretty long period of time. But teaching online can mean so many different things. It can be synchronous, it can be asynchronous, it can be group, it can be individual. Can you sort of describe what the typical, if there is one, type of online, you know, classroom that you've been in looks like and how it works?
Yes. Oh, typical. That's tricky.
that's a hard word, right?
Yes. So as you mentioned, I've taught in a variety of online classrooms. I have taught asynchronously that has a synchronous component. Wow, that's a mouthful, where students essentially are off doing their key content work and then coming back to you, teacher, for intervention or maybe a drop-in homeroom type setting where they're just building community. At CGA, we offer three learning modes, which is where typical gets really uncomfortable sounding, because there's not a typical way for a student to learn. Essentially, we offer small group live instruction where students have a schedule and they say have chemistry every Monday at 2, and they show up and they meet their teacher and their peers of 12 to 15, and they engage in online instruction. And peer work and they've done a pre-assignment. Also, we offer what's called the flex learning mode for those students that want a more asynchronous component. So they will watch the recording after the class has taken place, do the work, and the teacher will grade and provide feedback. We do that with some scaffolding at CGA because I have found that asynchronous school works for some, right? There's a model that works for everybody. But what I've always struggled with asynchronous is the fact that parents always want that accountability piece. It helps keep that motivation going for many students. And so we offer that accountability. They have to complete all work by. Students have to be engaging with the course every week. Yeah. So that then that way it doesn't build up, right? Not that students can't catch up, but when we learn under duress, we really aren't making those long time learnings. We aren't ensuring that that is staying in our long term memory where, you know, it's like cramming for a test and doing really well, but then you forget everything that was on that test. So that's our way of trying to combat that. In addition to that, we have one-to-one learning. So students book in with a teacher. We encourage them to ensure it's a regularly occurring schedule because sometimes a week can go by and a student's forgot to book that math class that they needed. So they book in with a one-to-one teacher, and that teacher helps move them through the content at a responsive pace. So if the student has come to us and they say, and family, and we partner with parents. So parents partner with the teacher and say, you know, we've really been struggling in the math. And then the teacher will do, you know, those pre-assessments and slow down work and move at that pace. Or if a parent comes and says, you know, and again, the student's always included in this conversation. The student says, I know all of this. The teacher does some check for understanding, some pre-assessment to ensure that we're moving at a pace that ensures that the student stays engaged with the work, but that we're still meeting all learning objectives. We don't want to have a student go through a course and not get what they need from it.
With CGA, when a student is enrolled in a course, let's just stay with chemistry since you brought that up. Is it like a traditional school where they would have a consistent set of peers? Or because of the scope, the size, the so many different countries that are represented by your student population, would that change, you know, depending on the day of the week or something like that?
So our students are timetabled into a class. And so that chemistry class would always have those same approximately 12 to 15 students. There is some movement. So if a student at term break is changing countries and needs to go to a later class, then that student may pop into a later class. And then so another student might join. Mm-hmm. That being said, generally, every time you show up to class, it's that same those same group of students in your chemistry class.
It's really interesting. The whole challenge of scheduling is enough of a challenge, and then to introduce time zones into it, I'm sure is sort of a gymnastics exercise for you and your staff. So,
yeah. So our staff is completely global. We are a fully global school. So I have staff also across those. And we're actually 72 countries. That number changes. So whenever I have an intro, it's always one of those, I'm like, where are we at right now? but I also have staff in just about all of those countries. Mm-hmm. And so having such wonderful educators spread across the globe as well helps, because we can build a timetable that happens and the school can happen while I'm asleep. And that's incredible.
Switching gears a little bit, and we'll come back and talk more about Crimson Global in a moment, but in the intro to the podcast, you know, I pointed out that, you know, my observation about online schools really happened during and post COVID. And, you know, we have several family friends that their children were going to public school before COVID happened. COVID happened, they started doing online and they just stayed online. So, you know, that's personal experience. You were actually teaching online well before COVID, as you pointed out. What do you think are some of the trends that have led online schools to grow in popularity? I mean, COVID was a part of it, but it was not the singular factor, right? There were other things. What do you think some of those trends are?
Flexibility. Mm-hmm. I think we as a society looked and said, if I can support my kid at home or on the move, I can provide them more experiences and more doors open if they have a more flexible schooling model. I think that is our key driver. I think also our students, woke up and said, I have choice in education. Mm-hmm. There's another way to do this that works better for me. Are our students always the best way of us? Are they always the best at assessing what works best for them? I think that needs to be an ongoing conversation mm-hmm. with our students. Right? Yeah. School leaders need to have those conversations. Parents need to have those conversations. But as long as we're always engaging in those conversations, I think our students can help identify what works best for them.
Yeah, the flexibility issue is real. Some of our very close family friends that made the decision to keep their kids online after COVID, they're swirling now. And so, you know, they reach a certain stage, and especially the high school years, and they decide they want to go back to the physical school and be around their friends and blah, blah, blah. I think that's really interesting. Coming back more directly to CG, one of the things that fascinated me, and you'll have to unpack it because I'm, you know, really getting this information off of the website, which is very good, is there's clearly an intentionality about community building that is present in what it is that you all are doing. So I noticed that in the discussions about the hallways, you know, that has been a part of, you know, what you've been passionate about. But you also have, you know, student organizations like a debate team. And so how do you accomplish that given that your students are online, they're not physically co-located, and in fact, they might be very, you know, diverse in terms of, you know, where they're coming from. How do you create community in an online school?
It's almost exactly how you do it in a physical space. You just, again, it's that paradigm shift. So students want community. Students want to connect, unless they don't. There's always a kid in your hallway who's not as interested in community. But they've joined a school, and they want community. The virtual hallway work is work I've been doing for quite a while, and it's a phrase I've been using since I started teaching online about when I was training teachers about this is how you're going to walk our virtual hallways. So think about this at CGA. I walk in, I'm going to log into my virtual classroom. My students are also walking in, they're just using their fingers to do so, mm-hmm. and we'll engage in class. We still do small group work, we still do peer discussions, we do, for my younger grades, we do still do think, pair, and share. And that turn and talk moment happens in a breakout room. As a teacher, I can see what's happening in every room, so I still get to monitor. In addition to just classroom space, we have platforms where students interact. We have Teams. We've partnered with School Space. Teams is excellent. So as a principal, I have to be a bit more intentional about when I walk those hallways. So I actually block my calendar so that meetings don't overlap or the craziness of the day, because when you're in a physical space and I walk my virtual hallways, the craziness comes to me, right? So as I walk down and I say hello to Mrs. Smith in the hallway, she's going to flag me down and say, oh, you know, this is going on, or I meant to grab you at bus line. And those moments happen a little bit more organically. But if you make yourself present in this space, those organic moments still happen. So I intentionally scroll our team's virtual hallways and see what students are saying, drop a comment, see what somebody's up to, make sure to, you know, I have students who are highly competitive. I have students who are incredibly creative. So being in touch and seeing those moments. In addition to that, I have an open link, so any staff member anytime can just drop into my office. I have times where I'm just answering email and they can just pop in, just similar to if you were in a school sitting in your own office. Or I'm a huge fan of the new CART model that principals are doing, where they are on their carts and then they're just very present in the school. So I try to replicate that in physical space. I will also just drop into a live class as it's happening or watch a recording. And that just becomes the norm of the school, is that you're present, you're not isolated. There's somebody always around. In addition to that, because our timetable operates in the way that it does, we have students with a teacher in Vietnam and they're located in the United States, or they have peers in that same. And so they start to join, they start to form friendships. Mm-hmm. They start to message online. They set up study groups. We have student leaders. So we operate a house system, which may sound odd to our American colleagues, but I can hear people from other sides of the school think Harry Potter, mm-hmm. but no sorting hat. So our different levels have houses, And these houses have leaders and prefects, and these student leaders help build that community. And they help lead assemblies, and we have inter-house competitions, trivia nights. And it was last year, I looked at some of our community team and I said, we know the school has hit the point where students are what they want when they are taking control. And that's where we are, right? Our students come to us and say, we want to host a movie night. And we can look at them and say, okay, tell us how you'd like to do that. We're here. What is your thought? What does that look like? And they know. They'll take the reins as long as we as the adults enable them. And that's really where that community comes from. And they form clubs, Minecraft clubs, debate teams, Model UN. And then the staff, because we're global, can, you know, we can say, who has expertise in this? Somebody want to put their hand up and help with the students with the Innovation Club? Somebody want to help lead pitch night? And we find times and we do it. Sometimes we have to offer two because time zones are tricky, but this is still happening. And sometimes a student says, you know, I'm going to get up at 6 a.m. because I really want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And that's incredible to see.
When your students are interacting together, you know, during class, I mean, I've taught online as well, and I can see how they form relationships. In a physical high school, you know, they leave and they go grab a pop together, and, you know, they do stuff like that that really starts to build that I don't know, that peer fabric that, you know, has great parts about it and also sometimes some parts that are pretty challenging. You mentioned that your students are, you know, finding ways to connect with each other online outside of what would be the traditional school environment. How do you see the social relationship parts of that as similar and also dissimilar from a physical school?
Yes. So sometimes they exchange phone numbers and they text. Sometimes they find each other, all the students find each other on social media. A lot of times they just one-to-one chat on Teams. Where it's similar is my daughter attends CJ. This is her mm-hmm. first year, and it's been an eye-opening experience, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And generally all positive. She'll just have a friend up on FaceTime, and they'll be doing homework together. Mm-hmm. Or I'll walk into a room and she'll be like, oh, I'm just showing, you know, Susie the, you know, the living room. She's going to walk me around her house next. And yeah. This did not come from any prompting from me. And I've seen other students do it in other settings where students who want to connect will, and they find a way to do that. And again, if we are as a school valuing community, mm-hmm. then the students value the community as well. And then that isolation can fall apart a little bit. I know that there's a big concern about isolation in online school.
Right.
And in my experience, a lot of students who are interested in online school, and an online school such as this one, where they have that opportunity to have peers, they're working to make friendships. And mm-hmm. we also have our student leaders came to us and said, you know, our first year at CGA, we had a lot of fun, but we wished we would have made more friends. And so we want to do a mentor program for the younger students. And so our older students put together, it started out pretty simplistic, but just a spreadsheet and said, welcome to school. We're your student leaders. We are going to have mentors and mentees. Sign up and we'll help pair you. And then they started pairing students together to show each other around, to talk, to have a built-in friend at school. And that also I find help. And our staff is great at it too, just helping ensure that students establish those friendships a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, giving them time to talk and connect and share about themselves.
Speaking, sort of having you put a different hat on to the extent that you feel comfortable, you know, as a parent, you know, with your daughter attending now, are there things that you're trying to be intentional about in terms of when she's not going to school and you're in your community, getting her out with other, you know, kids her age and that sort of thing? Like, do you have to think about those sorts of things when you're a parent of an online student?
I think it definitely comes into my mind. I have not had to be as intentional as I thought I would have to be. My daughter is incredibly driven individual. And she will not do something just because I said that it's a good idea. She's on board for suggestions, and I appreciate that about her. So I did share with her that if she was going to go online, it was important to me that she do, you know, maintain friendships, and that may take more work. And so we had that candid conversation, right? And that's part of those conversations we have with students when they're trying to choose a learning model that, that works for them. And so I had to put on my parent / school leader hat and have that conversation with her. And she hasn't needed to have any additional work in that area. She drives that herself. She makes friends. She rides horses. And so she goes and works at the local barn where a number of students go online. I didn't know that when we were getting started, when I was getting her started in this. And so she was like, oh, this works perfectly. She's like, everybody's done with school at 1 on Mondays. So I will be at the barn until dinner. Okay. So as long as somebody can get her there. But again, it's really no different than if she were in physical school and I had to find a way to get her to an activity at 4 instead of 1. So it seems to have found itself in the trade-off. I will say, I think family feels more concerned about those things. And because I've watched online school work for so many students, I went into it with a little bit more trust. Mm-hmm. And I was hopeful that everything I had seen work for other students would work for her since she wanted to try this. And I'm grateful that it has.
One of the things that I enjoyed learning about on the website, but would love to hear a little bit more about, is you do meetups with your students. So physical in-person meetups, and the fact that you're an international school just makes that even more intriguing. Can you talk about some of your experiences, maybe picking one of those out that really stands out as being fun or exciting, or, you know, what happens during those meetups when they all of a sudden go from seeing each other on screen to being in person, you know?
Yeah. I think if we were to listen back to this, there's going to be this theme of pair of adults get out of the way. and honestly, so every meetup that I've been a part of, there is the common thread in any online setting, but especially here at CGA, is that if you can help the first 10 minutes and then get out of the kids' way, they act as though they've known each other forever. It always. And it doesn't matter if I have a junior high student and a senior in high school in the same space. They all just get along and find, like, they just build this little community moment, have this shared experience together. Meetups at CGA can be anything from we've all gathered at the park to have a picnic and play some games, to this most recent one I went on was in New York City, and we went to Top of the Rock, which was an amazing experience. And we also walked the High Line. Mm-hmm. And students come together. We have a opening, hello, everybody, let's introduce, make sure we all know each other. What's interesting is when students sometimes meet me in person, I sometimes get the, you're taller than I thought you'd be, or you're shorter than I thought you'd be, which is also a really fun online game where we talk about how tall or short we are because we all see each other from, you know, shoulders up.
Yeah.
But they, once that part is done and they understand what we're there and up to, the students are like, great, so glad we have chaperones, and they take it from there.
Mm-hmm. I guess my last question, you know, acting as the principal of the school, when you're thinking about, you know, bringing staff on, are there certain things that you look for a staff member to know that they're going to be successful? And are there also things that when you're onboarding new faculty, new teachers, that you have to pay, you know, very strict attention to make sure that they're able to be set up for success?
Yes, those are excellent questions. So as I'm bringing faculty on, resumes are fantastic, interviews are helpful, but my favorite thing is one interview question specifically, and that is, tell me about your favorite lesson to teach and describe it to me in as much detail as you can. If that teacher's eyes light up and they, like, the screen kind of comes alive, a quality educator, it doesn't matter if your practice is in person or online, that energy comes through and that excitement for the topic. And that's the moment I know they're going to be just fine. We can teach the rest. And so that's my favorite question for staff. And I'm sure all of my teaching staff, I don't know if any of them got away with not answering that one. So I'm just starting to think back. That's a question I implemented about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it really unlocked some things. As far as training and helping ensure that they come along, it's getting rid of the isolation feeling. It's ensuring that staff know that they also have a community. We do that through we do what's called the weekly update. It's a newsletter, runs all year long. We put the most recent week at the top. We have all staff briefings once a month where all staff can come together. Again, time zones. So sometimes there is going to be a staff member who has to watch the recording, or you know, we move it around as needed. We also have departments. So teachers can meet by department, and those department heads are incredible. And they often hold an AM and a PM session, just again for time zones. But really ensuring that our teachers know that they have each other and that they have leadership behind them. I love working online for a variety of reasons. And I am on this mission to help ensure that online education can be one of the best options out there. I often say I'm trying to get rid of the head tilt that comes with education, like the, oh, they go online, because online is here and it can be fantastic. So I want to bring our teachers along with that. So another piece we do is we spend a lot of time reflecting on our teaching practice. We do the same thing in physical space, but what is it that we can bring into our space? Or, oh, I taught this lesson, I think I was up in front too much. And so we spend a lot of time with teachers talking about that too, to ensure that we are leaving space for the students to interact and not being quick to fill a silence, as we can often do online, but also leave them that thinking time and give them that quality instruction.
It's interesting hearing you talk about it in that way. As I think back about both my own experiences, but also the faculty in my college, you know, when we went through COVID, and Ohio University is very residential, so it's built to be an in-person, you know, experience, as you can imagine, and then forced to go, you know, 100% online for a period of time, and then problem solve through that. I think that it definitely had the effect for all of my faculty of making us be more reflective on what we do with our students. And that can take a lot of different forms, but the way I would describe it, that, and this is more from my own personal experience, when you're really good as a classroom teacher, you can default back to stuff and know it's going to work, right? And that, you know, you have certain things that you like to do in class that you can always pull it off. And so if you're having one of those days where it's just not clicking, you always have something to revert back to. And I think that's great. And I've done that. It's been part of my career. I also think that you can get into a habit of doing that. And you can't necessarily be like that in the same way when you're teaching in an online class. Like, you have to be a lot more methodical about understanding that if a lesson isn't working in the online environment, you can't just pivot back to, you know, something that you feel really comfortable with necessarily. You have to figure out how that's going to work in the online environment, figure out how the technology interacts with that. So that's a long way of saying, I think that when you go online, I think it causes us to be a bit more reflective about how we're doing things, because there are new variables of the technology, the co-location of the participants that all play a factor in it. So I think that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. The last question that I have for you actually is, you know, you've been doing this for a long enough time. As you sort of reflect on the state of technology and the way that that's changed, I don't know, like, where do you see it going in terms of how that impacts your day-to-day practices? And are there certain things related to technology, whether it's your LMS, you've mentioned Teams a couple times, are there certain things that are really game changers to making the online environment work for your students and your faculty?
Yes. Oh, so many things. So CGA, you've been on our website. So we pride ourselves on being innovative. And as part of that, we have been working on some in-house technology that I'm quite excited about. Our teachers are going to start piloting our own Learn platform. Because what technology has brought us is this ability to really break down the barriers of physical space, which sounds idyllic, but think about the fact that my whiteboard can be up front for every kid. Mm-hmm. Think about the fact I feel like everybody's talking AI, but let's follow that path for a minute. Let's think about the fact that I could have an AI assistant helping surface learning insights so that as an educator, when I'm going for that reflective practice, I can analyze in my classroom, how long did I talk? How long did my students talk? What questions did they ask that I thought I was teaching? And if I, as an educator, can have help with that reflection, I then get to bring the more human element and the more fun part of education into my classroom, right? I get to bring that creative lesson. Or as I'm building a lesson for students, and I've done this before, I've been in the middle of a class, you discuss this moment of, oh, I can pivot back to what I know. I've been teaching a lesson and everything I'd planned, I'm ready to go. We get it up on the board, we start doing it, and all of a sudden I realize there are some pieces of scaffolding missing. The great thing about technology is I can look at these students and say, folks, just like I would in a physical space, friends, we need to take a step back. Hold for 5 minutes and put you in breakout rooms to have a conversation about, here's your prompt. I can, as an educator, just like I would in a classroom, right back when I started teaching, pull from my file of, okay, this is what we're going to do. I can now do that, but it's instantly more engaging. I don't have to wait for copies. And again, now with some of the tools out there, I can, if I've decided we're going to do a leveled reader, I can still take the same topic and have it re-leveled for everybody in the room. And that's what technology has done. It's helped me as an educator take my practice to the next level. It's helped me work with other educators and say, hey, let's have a quick reflective conversation. The data is already here. And those data-driven conversations are so important. We need to ensure that we're always anchoring in data with teachers. And so I always just tell them, you know, the data is just the data. It's just numbers. But let's look at it to see how we improve or what should we be shifting and changing. And all of that now is just so much more front and center for us.
Yeah. Brittany, it's been wonderful getting a chance to meet you personally. And I've also really enjoyed getting to learn more about Crimson Global Academy. It seems like a great school. And I'm trying to envision some way that we can get some of your students involved in the podcast to have them talk about their experiences.
I would love that. And a number of our students would as well. So that would be fantastic. Scott, I've really enjoyed this time with you as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. My guest today has been Brittany Bates. She's the Senior Vice President and Principal of the U.S. Diplomas Pathway at Crimson Global Academy. We'll have a link to CGA so that you can learn more about the school in the text accompanying the podcast. We want to thank everyone for listening, and special thanks to April Koska and Trinity Sweet for their work as associate producers on the podcast. We look forward to seeing you again in the next episode. Let me stop the recording so we'll upload.